All right, good morning and welcome to the second edition of the Image-Based Linux and Boot Integrity DevRoom. On the first edition, we were down in the basement, deep underground. Now we've been promoted up and we have a window, which is great. Yes, you cannot hear me. That is fine. There's no speakers. This is for the live stream, but thank you. This is just for the live stream. Now, we're not important enough to have speakers or other microphones, so if you have questions, please raise your hand. We welcome questions and discussions, but then I'm going to ask the speakers to please repeat the question or the comment before answering it, because we want people on the live stream or watching the recording to hear the question. Otherwise, it looks like the speaker is talking to himself like a crazy person. A bit of logistics, and then we will start. So all the talks have the same format. Speakers have 20 minutes for content, plus 5 minutes for Q&A at the end. Some speakers like to have questions during the talks, like Leonard, so please do that if they allow it. And then we have a 5 minutes buffer at the end for spillover and for changing the speaker. If you need to leave the room or re-enter it, please, if possible, wait for this 5 minutes buffer at the end, because it's a small room. Seats are noisy, doors are noisy, it disturbs the proceeding if 20 people start leaving in the middle of the talk. So we have the 5 minutes at the end, please leave at the time if possible. Then on top of that, we have a great set of talks today. We have an even greater set of speakers, and none of them are controversial tech billionaires. You know, it's not a given these days of Muslims, so I think that's good. And finally, we are also organizing not just this DevRoom, but another conference, All Systems Go, is going to happen in Berlin on the 31st of September and 1st of October. We are going to open the CFP in a month. Already looking for sponsors, though, so if you work for a company that's sitting on a big pile of cash and don't know what to do with it, please go on the All Systems Go website and the sponsors link is open. And with that, let me introduce the first speaker, my colleague Leonard, and he's going to tell us everything you ever wanted to know and then some about TPMs. Thank you. Let's welcome Leonard.
Okay. This thing seems to work. I got a lot of slides. I have no illusions. I'm not going to be able to go through all of them because it's just too much stuff. Also, it's going to be fairly technical. I really hope that at least some of you have a basic understanding of what a TPM is. I did a similar talk like in past years at past conferences, so I kind of hope that one or the other already has a rough idea what we actually do with TPMs and systemd. But let's to revisit this. What are actually the goals with the TPM work that I personally and others have been doing in systemd? The big goal that I have is that we catch up with other OSs, because right now it's like all the big OSs that are not classic Linux distributions tend to have some form of TPM hookup that just works. And if it's not TPM, then at least some other kind of security enclave thing that works like a TPM. So if you look at Android, if you look at Windows, if you look at all these things, they all have this. So for me, it's kind of disappointing that we don't have the same level of support on generic Linux distributions. My goal is that we can, in particular, default to measured boot. To catch it up in that regard, and not just have secuboot, but also measured boot. So that we can, by default, like Windows does it with BitLocker, do disk encryption lock to TPM. That it's not just about that, but also about service credentials, so that we can do more than just disk encryption lock to TPM and actually pass secrets, or how we call them a little bit more generically, service credentials to services in a relatively secure way and can authenticate them and encrypt them in a way that's locked to TPM. That we have a method to do secure parameterization of the boot, because there's always this problem that if you have a fully locked down boot, that typically means that you only run stuff that is signed, or you lock your disk encryption to stuff that is what you think it should be, but that makes parameterization a little bit harder, because basically parameters are usually something local, something that not the vendor does controls, but the local admin or local user controls. So doing this securely in a way that everything's authenticated and encrypted if needed is not trivial. One of the goals also to make confidential computing a thing, right? Like in confidential computing, you need to basically make sure that any input to your system is in some way authenticated and encrypted, and TPMs play or at least TPM-like things play a major role in that. And then also provide APIs so that others can start making use of TPM in a more reasonable way. I mean, TPM stacks have existed for Linux for a long time, but the problem is that if you actually want to write a application that uses TPM and has a sensible policy that locks to the system state, that's very hard for the simple reason that there are no boot time measurements, or traditionally there weren't. So, and the definite goal of all of this is to make the TPM stuff something that can be turned on by default on generic Linux, the same way how Windows just does TPM. If a TPM is available, we should do the same, because right now none of the distributions generally do that. The work on that has been progressing quite substantially. So these are a bunch of the components of systemd that already have been hooked up. Just to give an explanation, like a brief of what all this is, crypt setup is like this thing that unlocks your disk and can do this against the TPM. Crypt enroll is the other side that you enroll like an encrypted disk against TPM. PCR extend is about doing measurements so that we can measure the boot status, like so that that the TPM has an idea how far has the system progressed booting. Like, is it still in the initRD? Has it left the initRD and things like that? This is kind of relevant so that you can bind secrets to these system states. So, for example, that you can say, disk encryption secrets shall only be accessible to the OS during early boot, during the initRD phase, but not later, so that anyone who can exploit the system later has no chance of actually getting access to the disk encryption volume key, at least not from the TPM directly. PCR machines and PCRFS are kind of like they're actually just a multi-call thing for PCR phase. They measure identity of the system in a way, right? So that you can write policies that are generic, but also unlock only against specific systems. PCR machine basically measures the etc machine ID, and systemd PCRFS measures the UUID of the file systems that you booted from. Systemd stub is this UFI stub that runs during, from UFI, like before the kernel initializes. It does measurements of the kernel itself. It's like, I did another talk about UKIs, it's kind of related to that. Systemd measure is something that can predict the measurements that are going to happen if you boot a certain kernel up, UKI in particular. UKIFI is this little Python tool that allows us to build UKIs. So they glue together kernel entity and so on, and then do invoke systemd measure to get the measurements and then get that signed and blah, and blah, and blah. Systemd PCR lock is a major component of all of this. More recent addition, it's about management of PCR-based policies for TPM that cover all the stuff that is inherently local to the system, right? Like, because if you want to bind disk encryption to TPMs, what you actually do is like parts of it, the measurements cover stuff that the OS vendor controls, right? Your Debian distribution, your Fedora distribution. But then there's all the other stuff that covers stuff that is inherently local to your system, right? Like that the OS vendor cannot predict, right? Like because you have a different graphics card, different CPU, different firmware version, and so on. So actually the part that the vendor controls are relatively small, but it's really nice, really well predictable. That's where systemd measure is about. And then there's all the massive other stuff, which is really chaotic because there are so many different stakeholders, right? Like there are firmware developers and Intel is always in there. And there's, So systemd PCR is supposed to help you manage that. Systemd report is this thing. I mean, it's a dynamic repetitioner, but one of the nice things it does is that on first boot, it can create partitions for you and actually lock them to TPM. So it can not just grow in partitions, but it can also set them up and do that in a really smart and cryptographic enhanced way, if you so will. Systemd creds is like this tool that I mentioned this earlier about system credentials, how we can securely parameterize services and systems in a way that is locked to TPM. Import credentials is kind of the other side. It's systemd creds is a tool that you generate these encrypted, authenticated credential things, and import credentials is like how you then consume them in a service, so that it's very easy for systemd services to just have secrets like, I don't know, key material, but also configuration that is locked to TPM. Systemd SB sign is a recent addition to systemd. It's just a second boot signing that does pretty much the same thing that PE sign do or SB sign do. Wow, I don't have much time left. Yeah. Sesame key doors, yeah, also something. Let's not go into that goal. One of the primary goals that I have with this is that we put more focus on measured boot, not secure boot. You know, secure boot is the thing where everybody signs their stuff with ultimately some key that is controlled by Microsoft. Measured boot is this other thing where you just let boot everything, and then however you bind your disk encryption to that only this kind of software has run. I find this a lot more democratic, right? Like, because it doesn't make any restrictions on what you boot. It just says, yeah, if you do not boot what I chose earlier when I encrypted my disk, you will not get access to the disk. So that makes, like, it should be actually something that open source people should really love, because it's democratic, it's free, it makes no restriction on controlling anything, prohibiting anything. All it does, all it says is that, yeah, the system needs to be in this specific state for the disk to be accessible. And that's a good thing. It follows more like a TOFU model, right? Like, instead of having the central database of certificates where everything's signed, it does it the other way around. It basically, yeah, when you install your system, you lock everything down. At that moment, you trust your system, and from that point on, you know it's going to only be unlockable if system's still in a relatively similar state. So to me, yeah, measured boot is way more interesting. Secure boot is kind of this add-on. You can also do this, there are reasons to do this, but I find measured boot is like, yeah, it's a lot more focused because it actually allows you to control what you want instead of what some big organization, big distribution wants to do, and it's more democratic. This is my take on things. Luca, for example, loves secure boot. Yeah, so. Now to come actually in the last 5 minutes to the really interesting stuff. Something that we recently added is actually that we can combine the system EPCR lock. I mentioned this earlier already, is like the thing for managing all the local things of the system, like the local measurements that are specific to the local device, and combine them with signed PCR policies, which are these policies that cover all the measurements that the OS vendor controls. It was really hard to combine these two things, but to me this was always a holy grail, because it basically means, yes, the OS vendor can lock down things that the OS vendor controls, and you can lock down the stuff that your local system is, and then you can combine them both and have a security policy where you basically can say, yeah, my laptop can only be unlocked if the system is still in that state where I installed it, plus anything from Fedora runs on it. This is actually impossible to implement on TPMs because the policy language that TPM support doesn't allow this. I talked to a lot of TPM people and nobody could come up with a nice version. Ultimately, the way that I found is by sharding. So basically, the disk encryption is done with a large key, and one half is protected by the PCR lock stuff, and the other stuff is protected by the signed PCR policies. So the TPM doesn't actually know that there are two policies involved. It's a nice hack. I think it delivers pretty nicely what we want. It's not as good as if the TPM would support this natively, because these things can be authenticated out of sync, basically. It would be better if the TPM could do the same thing, but it's still kind of nice. Yeah, it was very tough not to crack to figure out how this works, but I'm kind of happy with this. Other things that we recently added is TPM2.target. It's like this, we finally have a synchronization point when the TPMs actually have shown up during boot, because we are like, normally on my laptop, for example, TPMs are just there. What was that? TPMs are just there, right? Like, because they are discrete hardware that is probed during early boot, and it's just there. But the thing is, in real life, it's not always that way. Like, in particular in ARM, TPM is kind of implemented via software thingies and enclaves. And then needs to first run some software in user space so that the TPM device can actually show up. And it, because they don't have storage, and then this OS component needs to provide storage to the enclave. So long story short, there's actually, during early boot, it takes a while until TPM shows up. And there are other reasons why TPMs show up late, because, I don't know, the drivers are compiled as modules and are loaded only on demand, because a generic distribution tends to want to support a lot of systems and not just one. So this was actually kind of weird, like figuring out that, oh my god, we cannot assume that a TPM is there all the time. Because it means during early boot, TPMs are there. During late boot, TPMs are there. But in the middle, there isn't. Simply because, what the firmware found and what user space found, there's a gap in the middle until we actually manage to set up things the same way as the firmware earlier did. One other thing, and probably the last thing I'm going to talk about is, before we switch to questions, the system credentials are now available unprivileged. or service credentials. I mentioned what these credentials are, right? We extended this a little bit so that it's not only something that you can parameterize the whole system and system services with, but also user stuff. And it's actually quite nicely implemented because it actually it involves the user ID of the user and hashes that into the policy, like basically into the key that we actually use for the encryption authentication. So that basically means even though the concept of users, an operating system concept, right, like the TPM has no concept of users or anything like this, you can nicely lock your system credentials to that and then also to the TPM. So the actual encryption authentication basically takes a key that is ultimately released by the TPM, but it also contains material from that we acquire from the kernel itself in a secure way. And that basically means, yeah, if I log in as user Leonard, I can ask the system to unlock these secrets for me, but any other user couldn't do the same thing. That's kind of nice. There's so much other stuff that we recently added, like multi-profile UKIs I talked about. All kind of small things that make it really nice to work with this so that you actually can build stuff much nicer. And it goes on and goes on. And like confidential computing support, we now support natively during bootloading. We can measure with something that is not TPM. We have this offline mode, so that distributions can actually build all that stuff in the build system and then have this signature logic in some other system that is very much secured, and then you can get the signature back and then merge it again. We have Varling IPC APIs nowadays. One of the last things was really hard actually to do, right, like the PCR log stuff. You know, we need a lot of meta information to implement these kind of policies, and the meta information needs to be somewhere for the root file system, but we can't put it on the root file system because it's supposed to unlock the root file system, so we need to put it in the ESP, but then you also need to figure out how do you authenticate that and things like that. We figured all this out. There's so much more. As I mentioned right in the beginning, we're not going to cover ourselves. So let's talk about questions.
That's just for 5 years. How do you guarantee that whenever I buy a new laptop, I can just use clone Zeta to clone my own disk to my new disk, and after 2 hours, I am done. I am using the new laptop.
So the question was regarding, like, if I buy in 5 years a laptop and I want to transfer all my data from the old one to the new one, that this actually works. You know, the TPM stuff is just one way to unlock your disk. In the same way how BitLocker and all the other operating systems usually give you a recovery key or something like this, we do too, right? Like, you should not lock your disk exclusively to TPM if you want to be able to get access to it without the TPM. So TPM is one way to get in. It's the same way as FIDO keys, pass keys are another way to get in. The same way as your password might be another one and the recovery key. I would assume that in future, the same way as BitLocker pushes you to using TPM by default, and then combine it with a recovery key, we would kind of do the same thing. And certainly we added this the high-level concept of a recovery key to disk encryption, and it's actually the exact same thing as a password. The only difference is that we generate it from the computer, so it has high guaranteed high entropy instead of letting the user pick it, which generally is usually not that high entropy. Okay, I have a question. So the question was regarding what do we do with for microcode and the firmware stuff, I presume, that happens during early boot and the changes that happen, how like they affect the PCR management and then the policies we generate. This is precisely what System2 PCR Lock is about. It's like this management tool to deal with this kind of stuff. So firmware updates, microcode updates, blah, 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 this will all affect the PCRs. What System2 PCR Lock is supposed to help you with is that we have a clear way how, in the good cases, in the best cases, we will know ahead how the PCRs are going to be influenced. I mean, we don't know right now generally because this data is simply not available from the firmware vendors. But my hope is that eventually FW-update-D, it carries some of this information already, like the PCR0 result. But I kind of hope that these kind of information will sooner or later be available for them. That would be the ideal case. But of course, it's going to be, at least initially, the absolute exception. The common case will be we just don't know. However, what we do know is that there's going to be a firmware update going to taking place soon. So it comes out with all the infrastructure to actually relax the policies when a firmware update is expected, and then you reboot, and then we'll immediately lock it down. So this is kind of what Windows does too, except we do it much nicer because we can do this more fine-grained, and we don't drop all the protections. We just drop the protections of the step where you do it. And then, yeah, and then we just look at what the new measurements are and lock against that.
If you booted, measured, or secure, and you have a kernel update or something other that influences the boot, how do you get the new measurement into your boot chain? To boot once with a recovery key?
And if you update, like, so the question was regarding what if you update a kernel or something like this, how does that reflect into the PCR policies? So we don't do this, like, we don't have to. That's a good thing, because the other thing that I talked about, like the signed PCR policies, this is about like kernels, if they're built the way we think, like as UKIs, they can come with a signed golden measurement JSON thing built in, right? And this is signed, and we can pass a signature to the TPM, and then anything with the public key behind that signature will be accepted for unlocking the disk, right? So that basically means we never have to re-enroll, as long as the changes to the PCRs are controlled by the OS vendor, because the OS vendor will just predict what the changed measurements are going to be, sign it with their own key, and that signature key is going to be accepted by the TPM, and hence we are good. Right, so there's this fundamental difference on how Windows does it, because in Windows they don't have the support because they designed for TPM 1.2 instead of TPM 2. Right, in TPM 2 there's this concept of signed PCR policies, in TPM 1.2 there wasn't. So what Windows does in this case, they turn off all the protections, you boot, and they lock again. Right, so they basically re-enroll. We don't have to do this because we have the luxury of coming late and just being able to rely on TPM 2. So I'm sorry for the Windows people that they're kind of stuck with this shitty model.
So does this also mean that systemd will help us get the initial provisioning of the TPM up and running? Because personally, I still find TPM2 not something I would let an ordinary user deal with.
So the question was regarding TPM provisioning, like setting up the original TPM on first boot, like we already do this. It's called TPM to setup or something. It's like a service that we ship, and it runs during early boot and sets up an SRK, like a storage root key, the thing that you have to do if there is none. I'm pretty sure we can polish this like a little bit more, that we can, I don't know, give you nice ways to reset the TPM via Chrome command line, things like that. There are a couple of things in to-do list to do about this, but we're doing enough already to get this make this invisible to users. There was some.
In terms of the firmware PCR values, TCG is actually standardized in spec, where hardware vendors will provide a signed manifest containing PCR details.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware. What was said there is that the TCG group, like the people behind TPM, are preparing a spec regarding the gold measurements. I'm aware of this, but talking to some people from the TPM, from the TCG, they are not entirely sure if this is actually going to happen, like in real life. I find it way overdesigned. We need something much simpler, like the stuff that we need. Like it's so trivial. I don't know. I think when that appears, it's going to be trivial to consume this too, right? But let's wait until it actually appears. Otherwise, there's no point in supporting it.
So I had a meeting with the TPMs a few weeks ago, and we talked about this. And he says he's been trying to get vendors to put up golden measurements for years, and they haven't done it. So you mentioned the fact that LVFS currently provides PCR0 values. None of the vendors are using that at the moment.
Like I talked to, like, so the He mentioned that like the TCG people, some people try to get the firmware vendors to provide these gold measurements out of the box, and that so far they never succeeded. And in particular, he claimed that the PCR0 stuff that I mentioned was not actually provided by anybody to FW update the things. So my knowledge, like talking to Richard Hughes, like the guy behind FW update D or L, what's it called, LVF, anyway, the repository thing, they said that one of the vendors does the PCR0 stuff.
Also identified another problem, which is that for devices with the same starting PCR0 value that apply the same platform firmware update, he's getting a mix of result of different PCR0 values at the end of it, which is we're unsure why at the moment.
So most
devices produce the same value. Because
that firmware update captures. Yep. So, I'm not going to repeat that, but basically what I'm, let me still say that, I think the data that they have about PCR0 is kind of uninteresting, ultimately. It's not what I want, because what they carry, what the one field that they have covers the system state and then tells you the final PCR value. What I want to know is the measurements that got into that value to be able to replicate that.
So take Intel Big Guard, for example. Ideally, you can apply a verified where the platform firmware is verified and zero. We need to talk anyway.
Sorry, this is all the time we have, so let's thank Leonard.